This podcast is brought to you by Link, simply the best way to learn languages. After you listen to the podcast, sign up for a free account at link.com and study the full transcript using Link's revolutionary learning tools. Hello again. Welcome to another episode of English Link. Mark here with Steve.
Hi there. Nice to be here.
Yeah, the sun is shining today, which is a bit of a departure from the weather patterns we've had for the last couple weeks.
Well, we've had very warm weather here, most of it wet.
Yeah.
Which is not good because we need cooler weather and we need snow for the Winter Olympics. I think it's less of a problem for the downhill events in
mm-hmm.
Whistler.
Mm-hmm.
But for the local mountains where we're going to have the freestyle, I think mm-hmm. there's a real problem, or there could be.
I think there could be. Like we got a lot of snow before Christmas, but then since Christmas, I don't think we've had a lot. And then the last 10 days or 2 weeks, we've had this what they call the Pineapple Express, which is the weather system that comes in off the Pacific. Dropped from Hawaii or wherever it comes from, which brings a lot of warm rain and washed away a lot of the snow on the local mountains for sure.
You know, I went up there to have a look because I go up there cross-country skiing, mm-hmm. and then I went and visited and chatted with some people, and apparently they're stockpiling snow all over the mountain. They have been doing so for quite mm-hmm. a while, and then they cover this snow with a tarpaulin,
mm-hmm.
and the idea is that if you get a great mound of snow,
mm-hmm.
that creates sort of a refrigerator effect, and mm-hmm. of course you cover it with something so that the rain can't melt it,
mm-hmm.
and so they claim that regardless of what happens with the weather, mm-hmm. they'll have enough snow for the freestyle events.
Oh, I think that's the case. They've been stashing snow, they say, at the higher elevations. Well, plus, I mean, today you look up the hill. I mean, the tops of the mountains, it snowed up there,
even though
it rained hard down here. It did snow up there,
right?
And so, and they don't need that much snow for the freestyle events.
No.
I mean, nothing there is a very long. The runs aren't that long.
No.
They have the moguls competition, and then the half pipe, or whatever it's called. That's the half pipe.
Pipe?
Is that? Yeah, I guess that's a snowboard.
I don't know what all those things are.
And then they have the whatever they call the aerial.
Aerials. Yeah.
That doesn't need much snow either. So, I mean, I don't think it'll be a problem. It'll just be too bad because most of the time there's plenty of snow up there, so it just won't seem very wintry if they don't have a lot of snow.
Pretty bad, too, if everybody's standing around in the rain watching Winter Olympics events. But, I mean, the whole Olympics, I must say, though, you know, I was just thinking about this you know, the Olympics is so commercial.
Mm-hmm.
It's so commercial. I mean, they've got a lock on the use of the name Olympic.
Mm-hmm.
So some local Greek guy who had a pizza parlor called Olympic Pizza had to change the name of his pizza.
That's true, isn't it?
Something like that.
I mean, that's just
ridiculous. It's so commercial.
Yeah.
It's so commercial. And it's interesting because they have lots of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a big money business.
I know.
Big money. Anyway.
Yeah.
Kind of too bad, but I guess it's unavoidable. I don't know.
I mean, it's maybe not a business. They're not trying to make money at it.
But the athletes make a lot of money.
The athletes do well, for sure.
And obviously the sponsors feel that it's in their commercial interest to be sponsoring.
Right.
And they sponsor on television, and they mm-hmm. sponsor their beer hall. You know,
right.
Heineken has
and
a
obviously
pavilion.
The TV companies obviously make money at it.
Or
they couldn't afford to pay as much as they do. I mean, Does the Olympic organization, whatever it's called, International Olympic, they must make money.
Well, they need to make money to pay because I don't think many of their people, first of all, I don't think they travel in ones and twos.
No.
And I don't think they stay at the YMCA.
No.
And I don't think they travel by, the lowest possible.
Buggy.
No. Yeah. So they obviously live pretty high off the hog. I don't think they go back home for a bowl of noodles every evening either.
I know.
But, and then, of course, whenever you see the athletes interviewed, they'll always hold up their skis so that you can see the name of the manufacturer. And so it's a pretty commercial.
Well, that's not specific to the Olympics, though.
No.
That's any of those downhill or skiing events. Those guys have their sponsors. Mm-hmm. That's their livelihood. I don't have a problem with them promoting their sponsors.
But you know what? This makes me think of something. Here we are in the world today where we are so closely connected through the internet, through television, through whatever. We're all living in the same time, almost in the same space, and here we are talking about the Winter Olympics, and we're talking about weather, and we're talking about the money that's all sort of flowing around the Olympic Games, and at the very same time, you go down to Haiti, and we don't even know the number. Mm-hmm. Is it 50,000 people dead? Is it 100,000 people dead? How many people who have nothing to eat, have no water? It seems as if there's marauding gangs and total disorder down there.
And dead bodies everywhere. Dead bodies and injured people. And yeah, I mean,
unbelievable.
It's, I think it was pretty bad before the earthquake. So since the earthquake, because I think last year they had some kind of serious flooding or
tsunami or
something happened last year. So that they're still trying to recuperate from, and then this happens. Now, I mean, I guess because of the whole interconnectedness of everything, the international response has been pretty
But again, it's such a rapid response, and so you have this sudden arrival of all kinds of airplanes and boats and hospitals, and of course the UN is there, and there's all kinds of apparently regulations. You can't have a military hospital because it's a peacekeeping thing. Well, what does it matter if a person's dying on the street? He just wants access to medical care.
Well, yeah, I was reading an article where some of the aid organizations were complaining that there's no efficient way of getting the aid out to people. People are dying even though the aid is there. People are there ready to give it. And the problem is you've got the Americans there. You've got the UN there. They're pretending that they're operating on orders of the Haitian government, which is essentially
non-existent. If it ever was existent.
So nobody's really stepping forward and taking charge, which then makes things not work smoothly. These people were saying that the U.S. should just take charge. Not that they're Americans, but they were saying they're the ones that can make it happen. They should just make it happen, and the U.N.'s not going to do it.
But the difficulty there is, and I saw some complaints that I think the French were complaining that their aid planes weren't coming in, and the Americans, having taken over the airport, were giving priority to the American planes. And that insofar as evacuating citizens, the Americans had taken over the airport with a single landing strip, and that they were giving priority to their own citizens, which is kind of almost hard not to do. I mean, if the French, say, we're talking about the French here, or the Russians, or the English, or anyone had taken over the airport, they probably would give priority to their own citizens. So it raises a lot of difficult questions.
I mean, I guess you would. I mean, you shouldn't.
Shouldn't.
It's not your airstrip. You're just coming in to manage it.
I know. But it's easier to lean on someone. You know, that you know where you have connections and so forth and so on. And it's quite a mess, And then you read about, I mean, the people are upset, the Haitians are upset, they're demonstrating in the streets and creating barricades and stuff, and yet the planes and the boats are not being unloaded. I mean, why don't they go off and help unload and carry, each person carry? Of course, poor person that grabbed the first bit of supply from an airplane probably wouldn't get very far before he would be have his throat slit.
Well, yeah, I must say, I never quite understand the people protesting in the streets when there's been a disaster. Like, I think the same thing happened in New Orleans when they had that disaster. Like, people are trying to help.
Right.
Nobody owes you anything, really.
Right.
I mean, these are other countries coming in to help you.
Right.
Just appreciate whatever they can do for
you.
How can you possibly be protesting?
Yeah.
I mean, at a certain level, you have to look after yourself.
Exactly.
And these people are coming to help you. Wow, is that ever great.
And yeah, there will be problems and imperfections. I mean, what do you think, a group of angels have arrived that all operate perfectly like robots?
Right.
The other thing, if you're talking about that, is if the same magnitude of earthquake had happened just about anywhere else, there might have been 5,000 people killed.
Yeah, well, exactly.
So to some extent, the people there have to take responsibility. Now, it's not the fault of the poor person that they've been governed by corrupt people over the many, many years. But I understand, too, that that the colonial buildings built by the Spaniards, I haven't confirmed this, but I heard on Russian radio where I was listening, that those buildings are still intact. And that there are other, it was a 7.2 on the Richter scale, and there have been other places where they had an earthquake of 7.2 on the Richter scale. And there was nowhere near the...
But then they showed, like, the government buildings collapsed. Presumably those were built by...
No, those are more recent.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They showed some old cathedral that collapsed that looked like it was...
Oh, well, maybe. So then I can't... As I say,
I don't know. But I did read that, I mean, Haiti is one half of the island of Hispaniola, and the other half being Dominican Republic, where the standard of living is, I don't know what, 10 times what it is in Haiti. So it suggests that they have been doing a lot of things wrong there over the years.
Well, that's right. No, that's not fair then to sort of to visit the sins of all the previous governments on the people who are there right now.
No, absolutely not.
And there must have been some shocks felt in the Dominican Republic. But I was reading actually in the paper today, comparing the two places. And one of the things is that in the history, of course, Haiti was a... they revolted against the French crown. And, of course, there was a pretty severe sort of plantation economy there. So, obviously, there was a lot of resentment on the part of the black, you know, African slaves. And so they basically got rid of their Europeans. Whereas Dominican Republic remained a Spanish colony for longer, and they actually opened themselves up to immigration. So they have people there from different countries, you know, whether it be from Europe or from, I gather there's Koreans and Japanese and people from the Middle East. And so it's more of a mixed community there. Whereas you almost have the impression that in Haiti, more than anywhere else in the Western Hemisphere, you've got some kind of a pseudo-voodoo, you know, almost... you know, anti-modern culture going there. I know nothing about the place. I know I know no one from AK, so I can't say. But from what I read, not a very constructive, you know, environment.
No.
It seems.
No, obviously not. I mean, they don't have much going in the way.
I mean, they got, apparently there's 2 million Haitians living in the States. There's 100,000, I know, in just in Montreal. So there is quite a diaspora of people. But I don't know if those people eventually go back and try and improve things there. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it's tough when there sounds like nobody's in control, not just now during the earthquake, but most of the time. It's pretty lawless there. And, pretty tough probably to get things done and turn things around. You wonder whether something like this couldn't be used to help turn things around, but I guess it's centered on Port-au-Prince, which I don't know how many people live there. But
nobody knows, probably.
Nobody knows, probably. It sure is built up. I mean, I don't know how big the Haiti is, but do you picture a Caribbean tropical island, but there's not much in the way of trees that
Apparently,
that you see in these on the pictures.
No, apparently, I was reading that that Dominican Republic, which is 2/3 of the island, has a better climate, more rainfall.
I saw that too.
So it's not an ideal, not an ideal environment. Is it likely that as a result of this terrible disaster, they'll suddenly be able to sort of sort things out? I tend to believe that the reconstruction will take a long, long time. I think it's pretty desperate there. Who knows? But we're all vulnerable. I mean, we could have an earthquake here in Vancouver. They had this terrible earthquake in China. But, I mean, China is a much more, has greater means, is a much better organized society. Still, there was a tremendous loss of life there. And there were also similar issues of substandard buildings. And I think in China, I think there's a greater likelihood that, and maybe in Haiti, they'll start building a better quality of building, but there's no economy in Haiti. In China, there's an economy, there's wealth, there's money, there's educated people, a greater number of them than in Haiti. So I don't know what the future holds for Haiti.
No, pretty tough. And there's there are a lot of people there. There's 9 million people in Haiti.
Wow. On a basically... very poor. I mean, there's nothing there.
There's nothing there. Amazing.
It's amazing.
So I think they still have a few issues to out. Even once reconstruction gets going. And
I mean, it is extraordinary that the world can respond in this way to a disaster. So you would say, well, it would be great if the world could respond then on an ongoing basis to help places like Haiti. But then you say, okay, but there's a lot of places like Haiti. And the record in Africa, for example, if we look at places that have developed, China has gone from being very poor to having probably the highest rate of economic growth in the world. They didn't do it through foreign aid. India is now developing. Now, they've received a lot of foreign aid, but I don't think the development there has been, you know, based on how much foreign aid they're getting. Africa's got a lot of foreign aid and hasn't done very much with it. So, I mean, I don't think there's any normal thinking person in the world that wouldn't want all of the poor countries in the world to be better,
right?
Better off, that people have a decent living there, that those countries can operate and function properly with economies and jobs and proper health systems and education systems and so forth. Question is, how do you achieve it? And I'm not sure that massive foreign aid.
I don't think that's the way. Proven to be the way. But what's also true is that we're unlikely to solve it here on the English Link podcast.
This is true. This is true. We don't solve much here.
No. But we're happy to hear any of your thoughts on this issue. We're going to end things here. But what are your thoughts on Haiti or developing nations or really anything else that comes to mind? We're always happy to hear from our listeners.
Well, one thing I was going to add, that the people going to Haiti have to learn how to speak Creole. One day we should maybe have Creole on Link.
That's a good idea. We'll get to work on that. Any of you Creole speakers, get in contact with us. Okay. Bye-bye for now.
Bye for now.